I'll tell you, this preparation time for me was very different than times that I've spoken before. And this time, I was really conflicted with what to share. And the reason I was conflicted was because I don't want to burden people. I'm more of, I guess, I hope, an encourager. And I feel like what I'm going to share today is a big burden for not so much the people my age group, but the younger people here. There's lots of kids here. There's a lot of people in their teens and in their 20s. And to me, I felt like, wow, should I lay this on these guys? But at the same time, I was concerned that if it's not shared with you, then you're not prepared. And it's just a tough balance. So I think back to my own childhood. I was very young when the Supreme Court of the United States had legalized, they had given license to kill babies. The case, Roe versus Wade. And I was just, little when that happened. What happened was I would hear in church, and just to let you know, my father was a pastor. He had founded a church in Pompano Beach, Florida, in the mid-60s, before I was born. I was born in 69. And so what happened was I would listen, little bits and pieces, which I spent most of the time not listening, but I caught enough about the abortion. And I understood as a little kid, I was like, how could they kill a baby? I mean, what did the baby do to them? This is a simple, just a child's thought process. But there was always something that the preachers back then, and mind you, the preachers back then were not passive. They were not soft-spoken. It would be hard to sleep, and I tried. It would be hard to sleep through those services. The podium would not sit still, and they were much bigger and more stable than this one. Okay? And they would not survive the pounding. This would be the spray zone sometimes, because they get going so much, there would be some launching of things you don't want on you. And that's not to be critical. It really isn't. These guys, they were intense about what they believed. A lot of those guys, I miss. There's some I don't. But a lot of those guys I miss. But you know what? I'm going to see them again. Because those guys are in heaven. The women that were there, that were teaching the children, that were supporting and just everywhere, just so involved. And I think about them and I just look at that and go, wow, the service that they provided. And their service of slaving away in the kitchen every time we would have some sort of church event. Those ladies that, you know what? Their place in heaven may be greater than a lot of the preachers. Because God has His own system of how He values our hearts and service. So something that always came along with the message about killing babies, the abortion, was euthanasia. Not just for kids, but when adults get to a point to where they're deemed no longer a value to society. That this is a package deal, folks. This is one where, yeah, you start killing the babies, you license for that. But guess what? That same license applies to somebody deeming you at some point in your life that you are no longer a productive citizen and you can be eliminated. Now, does that mean they're going to be very grotesque and shoot you? No. In our country, I would have thought 10 years ago, no. Today, I don't know. And I'm serious about that. I'm not trying to be fun or silly about it. But you know what? It's done already quietly in a number of states. And it's done just through lethal injections. It's done in other countries. There's a country that has claimed that they have cured Down syndrome. You know how they cured it? They killed every baby that they could determine, every fetus that had Down syndrome. What country is that? Do you remember? What is it?
I think it's Norway.
Maybe Norway. We're not totally sure. Can you imagine the doctors had coming up with a twisted claim of, oh, we solved this? Wow. Wow. Amazing. So when I speak, I always feel like, for the most part, I'm ignoring the adults in the room. I'm really speaking to the younger people in their 20s here and their teens, and even the little guys here. Because, guys, I always think about that this little one here that is always restless and he's always got something on his mind, this guy may be one of our great leaders. And he needs to know. He's in a great home. He needs to know the truth. So I'm going to lay the truth on you. The truth is that Satan is around every corner. Let me share a few stories. When I grew up in Pompano Beach, and when I say Pompano Beach, we didn't live on the beach, okay? We didn't go to the beach very often, actually. I just was in the very hot area that is just hot, and we didn't get much beach breeze. But we lived on 22 acres, which sounds glorious. The trouble is, it's where our church was, and it was the church property. And there were a bunch of mobile homes, and they were in the back, and it was just a cheap way for staff to live. And it worked. We had a two-bedroom mobile home, and there were four of us boys and two bunks in a mobile home bedroom. There's like this much room between them. It's tight, but it worked. And then the church had this idea of, oh, build a parsonage. Well, a lot of you don't know what that term means. A parsonage is a house that's on the church property that the pastor would be using, pastor and his family, to live in. My father, after having done that, determined that was one of the worst ideas that you could come up with, because the church feels like they own that and they could just come right into your house anytime. And it's just got a lot of problems, and the family needs some time away. And so what happened was, the parsonage was being built, and it was very exciting to me, a little guy, because I'm like, wow, I get a room with just one brother instead of three. And there was more than just one bathroom in the whole place. And so what happened was, my brother and I, we rode our bicycles over there, Vernon and myself. And so I was about 6 years old, and we went over there, and we were told, don't go there. Well, yeah, we did. And so when we went over, we were just curious, looking around. It's under construction. It's really dangerous and everything. And then we found in the garage there, we found a can of red spray paint. What's a six-year-old boy going to do with a can of red spray paint? And I looked at it, but my seven-year-old brother, Vernon, he decided he would get an axe that was there. I don't know why an axe was at a construction site, but it was there. A little hatchet, I guess you could say. And so he took this, and he says, I'm going to kill this can, and wow, he hit that thing. Have you guys ever busted open a spray paint can? This was blood red, and it sprayed both of us before we could get anywhere. we were covered in red paint. And we're looking at each other going, what do we do? I don't know. Where did we go? What's the first place we ran to? Home. We go in the door, and my mother freaks out again. And she thought we were bloodied. And she's, this is matted all over us. It looks like blood. It's awful. And she's looking like, what happened? What is wrong? What happened? And who else is involved? And whatever. She just couldn't gather it all together very quickly. And then she realized it, and we paid quite a price. And the cleanup process was most painful. Okay, and my mother was not the most compassionate person. The hammer came down in an extraordinary way that day. And I kept saying, but I didn't do it. Vernon did it. Didn't matter. She didn't believe me, and it seemed like everybody in the church knew that Ben was a liar. That's another downside to being on the campus all the time. Fast forward just a year later, on that property, a gymnasium was being built. This big building was being built, and it was on the back of the property or midways. And my brother Jerry and I were going to church late. And when we were going to church, we got into church. We were running behind for whatever reason. And here I am, 7 years old, follow my brother. He's about 11. And we walk by and we see, and it's already dark, and we see people at the construction site. And my brother said, they don't belong there. And what do I know? He said, let's go. I'm like, okay, I don't know what we're doing. And so went over there, hide behind this dirt pile. And I'm like, what are we doing? He says, hush. These guys were stealing the copper piping so that they could go recycle it, because it was worth a good bit of money. That's worth a lot of money now. And so he said, I'm going to wait here. You run to the church and tell everybody so they can come and help. I'm like, oh, okay. Run. And it's a big property, 22 acres. So here I am. I'm running. I get in the back of the church. Church has already begun. And I tell the guys in the back, because there are always guys at the back door. And so I go in and I say, my brother, there's robbers. They're back of the building. And they're like, shut up, sit down. And because I think I had a reputation by that point. And so what happened was I finally like, no. And I threw a little fit in the back of the church. Knowing good and well, see guys, back in those days, the preachers had no problem calling down anybody that was sleeping or misbehaving or talking. And it happened to me before. So I knew there's no hold on this one. And my father was a pastor. And so they look up, and finally, somehow they decided, all right, we're going to go check it out. You stay here. Oh, I wanted to see the excitement. They went, they found out, they got these guys, and they pinned the guys down until the police got there. So I felt vindicated. I told the truth, see? You can believe me. Do you think that mattered to them? No, it didn't. Now, I'll tell you what, I am fighting allergies, so I don't know, is there another bottle of water somewhere around here? Because I'm about wiped out of this one. What's that? Fast forward to 13 years old. When you guys get tired of the stories, just tell me. I'm only talking to the kids. I'm ignoring the adults. So 13 years old, much more mature. I was at 13. Very wise, too. I knew a lot at 13. And I remember this argument that I had with my mother. And I got fed up with it. And I said, Mom, you're negative about everything. Because she was talking about, oh, you watching that show, and there's this and that show, and this and this and this. I'm like, come on, Mom, it's just a show. No. We had different conversations like that. But I was 13. I knew what I was doing now. I was a teenager. I knew what was going on. So what happened was, I just chose to be positive. And I chose, thank you, I chose to read things, my little books back then or whatever I was reading, and not a whole lot of them. But the things that I looked at, the TV shows, they were all black and white back then for me. And I'm watching these. I wanted the positive shows. I didn't like the terror films, the horror flicks, anything like that. And so I was always about the positive, right? But I chose to ignore what was evil. I chose, and it was a choice. I was old enough to make the choice. I didn't really realize until much later that I was making a choice to ignore that. I was lying to myself now. That's what I was doing. That's what I was doing. Yeah, I had a history of lying before then. I had a history of telling the truth. That happened. But now I'm lying to myself. That's the difference in this story. But then I started to realize the truth of 1 Peter 5:8. Be sober. Be sober to me means don't lie to yourself. That's what that means. Be aware, be sober, be vigilant. It says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. That's what my mother was saying. She didn't necessarily use words that I would grasp, but even if she did, would I have listened to them? I don't know. Probably not. There is so much in this one verse that we're reading. There's directives. Two of them. Be sober. Be aware. Be vigilant. Be paying attention. And the warning is, because who is my adversary? It's the devil. It's not, he may be your adversary. You may run across him. No. He's your adversary, period. That's it. A roaring lion. Let me tell you what. I see those stories every once in a while about people that... I just saw one in the last week or two about a lion that killed their handler. Now, it might have been a leopard or something like that. I don't know. But it's a big cat that can kill you. That's what it is. And when you think about this, God uses that in here as a roaring lion. Okay, a roaring lion, I don't know. That seems like one that's getting ready to pounce me or one that's already coming at me. I don't like either scenario. A roaring lion. And he walketh about. That means he's everywhere. He's going around. He's working his evil everywhere. And why? He has a purpose. Satan has a purpose. It says right here, seeking whom he may devour. Devour, eat you, okay, destroy you. It's pretty straightforward. This is what my mother was trying to get through to me. I got it a little bit late in life, well, real late in life. Here's a question for you guys. Have you ever had an argument with someone and you knew at the time you were right about it? You could back up your argument as solid as could be, only to find out later you were wrong. Has that happened to you? It's happened to me more than once. I'm a little slow on the learning side of things. But it happened to me more than once. But each time I've realized I was using my truth. That's what I was backing up my argument with. It was my truth. It wasn't the truth. And there is a difference. And my truth is not truth at all. It's simply my own reasoning. When did this kick in? This understanding. It really kicked in after I had my own family that I was responsible for. That's when it started to kick in. Wow, that was kind of late in life. Well, at least it kicked in, okay? So why do I say this to you all? I want you guys to think about it. Don't be so slow. Don't be as slow as me. Be faster than me. Be smarter than me. Listen now. Every one of you, please, the little ones in here, please listen. Make your choices now to pursue God. Everything else going on around us is going to distract us from, most importantly, God. Everything else is designed to do that. That is Satan's method to devour us, is to distract us. The devourer that's written here in the scripture encompasses so many things, but they all mean one thing ultimately, and those are things to distract us from God and what He wants us to do. How many of you have seen something on your devices, on a TV, newspaper? We don't even use a newspaper anymore. But anything, are you aware of the riots that are happening in different parts of our country? I want to see hands from the younger people in here. Okay. All right, so there are riots going on. If you don't know what a riot is, it is where a bunch of people get together and they make a lot of noise. They usually use signs and things like that because they're angry about something and they want it changed. Riots are not necessarily, well, protests are not bad. That's really a better label to my description I just gave you. That's a better description. When they turn into riots, that's when somebody's getting hurt. And that's when somebody or a group of people are intending to hurt somebody else. That's what a riot is. So these riots here, I remember seeing those when I was little. And again, they were in black and white on TV. But I could still tell that they were riots. Now back then, a lot of those were what we called hippies. Okay, if you ever heard the term hippies, okay, it's not a whole lot different than a lot of the anarchists and the rioters today. We thought the world was coming to an end because now they're killing babies and they've been licensed to do so by the Supreme Court. Then we see all these riots occurring because there was a war that had been going on, and that was Vietnam. And there was just all of these problems, and it was oppressive for me. That's why I hid and went to positive things and refused to look at the negatives. I was scared of them. So they're destroying other people's stuff. Can we say that these rioters are of God? Can we say that? Do you think God endorses that activity? He doesn't. You're right. If it's not of God, then who is it? Who is it? Satan. That's right. It's the devil. Satan thrives off of chaos. That's what he does. When I see a lot of this, and there's been studies on this, a lot of the people rioting right now, I'm going to use these terms right now. If it offends, it offends. They are spoiled brats, a lot of them. They are people who have wealth. Not all of them, but a lot of them. They have wealth, and they have never had to face a true crisis on their own. They are not paying their own bills. They are not responsible for that. The parents have protected them from consequences hitting them. That's what they've done. And now they think it ought to be in a particular way, their way. One of the things they've been doing is tearing down statues. And those statues, some people say, well, they're idols anyway. I don't see people worshiping at the feet of Abraham Lincoln. I don't see it. I've been to the Lincoln Memorial. I've been to different things, the Washington Memorial. I saw nobody worshiping. I have never even seen pictures of it. They're not idols. They're monuments. And God endorses monuments because, of course, they're throughout the Scriptures. If they're, of course, remembering something that is right and true. And you know what? The protesters, the rioters, they're saying that they're doing their protests for black people to be treated better. I don't buy it. It's just an excuse to lash out and destroy. So they've been deceived by Satan. They're being devoured in their own anger. And it's sad. It's costing them. So I grew up hearing about equality all the time amongst people. And I grew up, of course, after Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. But I remember hearing all of this about equality. And you know what? The number one equalizer that a country can have, the number one equalizer has no color at all. It is the law. That's what the law is designed for. When you look at where our laws came from, you can go to D.C., as long as it's still there, you can go to D.C. and see etched throughout D.C. on monuments all over the place, scriptures. When you see and study the law, the basis of law in this land, it's from Mosaic law, as in Moses. As in the Moses that received the written law from God. That's our foundation. God already has a plan for equality. If we're violating God's plan, then yeah, we're wrong. We're discriminating. That's right. And then we need to correct that. We need to be right with God. Matthew 22:37-39. Who has that? Can you read that?
Jesus said unto him, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself.
That verse right there, those three verses, that's the basis for our law. Did you realize that? That is a basis for our laws. So these rioters, they want to destroy monuments and property. But I want you to think about the two common threads amongst those monuments and the people that they represent that they want to destroy. Think about who the organizer of the riots. Who is that, or who are they? And I'll tell you a little interesting little side note here. A few weeks ago, I had this genius idea to take a vacation in Florida to a place that our younger sons had never been to, because they had really never been south of Orlando, Tampa area. And I thought, there's more to Florida. They should see it. Bad timing. Really bad timing. And of course, my early years, I was there. But going there, it was fascinating to see the different things. And yes, Florida has different facets to it. And we had gone to Miami Beach. Now, there's a whole variety of things we could discuss there. But nonetheless, the one key thing was, one of the evenings we went out to dinner to a Chili's, and it was right on the intercoastal there. It was a big shopping area that's really upscale, nice and good area. And we had parked our vehicle. By the time we got done, the sun had already set. We came out from amongst the buildings, and now you see all, you know, the parking area, which is a long strip, but you have to cross a major road. But there were, I don't know, were there 12, 15, 20 police cars? Something like that. And they all had their lights on. It was quiet. And we thought, what's going on? And they're just lined up on that road. And there's policemen everywhere. And we get closer, and I realize, whoa, they're wearing masks. They've got full riot gear on. I'm going, where's the rioters? What is going on? And so I'm telling the kids, all right, guys, let's just go. And let's get to our car, let's move along. And so they're like, oh, what's going on? Let's move along. And I look back and I say, Truett, come on. And he's like videotaping it. It's like, great. And so I'm like, come on, let's get in the car. So we're like, just be quiet. Let's not talk to anybody. Let's get in the car. And so we get in the car, and the parking there is really whacked. And so I ended up having to circle a couple times before I got out of the mess. They were waiting for the riders. Now, while we were getting to the car, we saw two pickup trucks. They were loaded with people in the back, and very few of them, and this is a Black Lives Matter protest, but very few of them were black. And they're in the back of this pickup truck, two of them, and they seemed like they didn't know what to do, you know, the driver and the either vehicle. And there was this guy that ran up beside him, really buff, I mean, good-looking guy, goes up, you know, like, all right, this is what we're going to do this, and he started this chant, ah, rah, rah, and he's getting them riled up. I'm like, he's really good at that, but he failed. Because what happened was, these guys, he tried to start these chants. He couldn't get them riled, and everything he was saying, it was very vile, anger, bitter, but he couldn't get them riled up. And I looked at that, and I thought, that's a little bit of a fail there, Satan. You blew it on this one. It didn't work. The police were prepared. They were not angry. They weren't going after anybody. They were just waiting and just saying, hey, we're here. And it ended up being a bunch of nothing, is the way it played out. So we got to see firsthand what was going on. Now, the organizer of the riots, that guy was a paid person. He was paid by somebody. Whoever paid them, I mean, ultimately, they're all a tool of Satan. Now, I mentioned Washington, D.C., and I made some notes on it. You know, what's the tallest monument there? Anybody, kids? Say it out loud. Washington Monument, right. Really tall, and it used to be the tallest building in the world, until the Eiffel Tower. But what is on the top of that is Laus Deo. All right, any of our Latin students in here, do you know what that means? That's right. Praise be to God. That's what it says on the top right there. And there's also a verse, a Bible verse in there, Exodus 28:36. Who has that? Did I give that to anybody? Exodus 28:36. All right, to train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, that monument is for George Washington. George Washington said, it is impossible to rightly govern a nation without God and the Bible. I like statements like this. I don't have to read between the lines. It's really clear what he just said. I don't have to try to figure out a riddle here. Nothing's vague. You can't misunderstand this. But that's one of the people, the founding fathers, that's supposed to be evil and horrible, and that they should be removed. And all of the traces of these founding fathers should be removed, is what we've been hearing a lot of lately. Now, when you look at it, you can pick out their sins and say, okay, yeah, they messed that up. They did that wrong. But you know, I remember the saying, you know what, if you're pointing a finger at me, what about the others pointing back at you? There's more pointing back at you than there is pointing at the other person. So remember that. All of us, if you're going to judge somebody else, you better be prepared to be judged yourself. Another monument, Thomas Jefferson. He did a lot. There's even this small college that has this little basketball team that has it. UVA. Thomas Jefferson. Now, do you know, anybody know what the Jefferson Building is in Washington, D.C.? Anybody? We call it something different. But it's the Library of Congress. That's what the Jefferson Building is. But it has Bible verses all over the place. We went and we visited there and walked through a number of places. But there's Bible verses everywhere, and there's imagery, and it's just incredible. But one of the verses there It says, John 1:5, the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehendeth it not. And I look at that and go, wow, that's a good description of not just the rioters, but our whole society right now. And how much of this darkness am I in still? And I need to pursue more of course, what God has provided his light. Now, Thomas Jefferson said, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever. That's a warning. And that's true. He didn't just come up with that and say, oh, this is the way I feel at the moment. He's basing that on Scripture. There will come a time that there is going to be a price that's going to be paid. So the Lincoln Monument has on there, did I give anybody Psalm 19:9? Okay. It says, Psalm 19:9, the judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. That's pretty straightforward. And that judgment is coming. Now, I'm going to note this. Lincoln, the first Republican president, and first and only president to end slavery. That's what he did. That's what he's best known for, right? The emancipation. That's what he did. And there are these rioters saying they're fighting for the people that have been abused because of slavery, but they want to attack the very president that was used to end slavery. Are you guys following this stuff? The craziness of it? Attack those? What is that? You don't know your history? You refuse to listen to it? You're just angry and lashing out. That's why I don't buy into what the rioters say they're rioting for. Abraham Lincoln also said, be sure to put your feet in the right place, then stand firm. My concern is not whether God is on our side. My greatest concern is to be on God's side. For God is always right. Oh, I love those that are just so clear that even I can get it. It's that simple. I struggle with some presidents that we've had that we, and God puts up the kings and he takes them down. He allows authority to be put up and he removes them. Okay, this is God's plan. I don't get it all the time. I don't like it all the time, but it's not for me to like or not. And there is a commandment that we're supposed to pray for one another. That includes our leaders, just like we were talking about with the Supreme Court justices. Even though you don't like them. Now, that's pretty hard for me to pray for these guys. I've had presidents that I loved. I've had presidents that this person is horrible and they hate America and they're godless. I still need to pray for them. So what I started doing was just, Lord, I pray that you capture their hearts. That if you'll capture their hearts, it'll solve so many things that we're dealing with as a nation. Lord, capture my heart, because right now I'm angry or bitter at this person and these other leaders that we have. I have seen presidents that many times when they're elected, they compromise quite a bit and they become more liberal. Maybe they started out as somewhat conservative, but they become more liberal and compromise this and this and that. I've seen some presidents hold true in my day. And when I've seen, that's just with me growing up and where I am now. I'm still growing up. So all of these monuments are being attacked, damaged, or destroyed. And one of the ones that I was baffled by as well was Frederick Douglass. Have you guys ever studied Frederick Douglass? Okay. He was a slave that was sold at 6 years old. Okay, they started working slaves about 7 and 8 years old, really working them hard in the fields. They had jobs to do closer to where the living areas were. But when they got to about 7 or 8 years old, they were doing the hard labor. They were in there. And he was one of those slaves. Well, he worked his way, and you ought to study his history, but he worked his way through And as a slave, he got an education. He grabbed other little pieces and things that he could. And there's a lot of slaves that did this. And they became great leaders. The more educated they became, the more godly they became. That's what I've noticed as studying all of these different leaders. So what happened with him, he went on to be absolutely instrumental in freeing the slaves. He met with Lincoln. He met with Lincoln and he explained from the perspective of the slave that was once a slave, or the guy that's still a slave, and all the horrors that happened. He lived it. So he was maybe the main liaison that was getting President Lincoln to understand everything that was going on. And so God really used him there. But he was also a teacher, just to teach people how to read. And he was also teaching Sunday school. I don't know that he preached. He may have. But he taught Sunday school as well. And you know what? That's one of the monuments that just got attacked. Who paid for the monument? The slaves that were freed as a result of Frederick Douglass' effort. Guys, it's not about somebody's skin color. It's about Satan devouring us. Don't buy into what you hear there. You know, the Constitution, the founders of our Constitution, there were 55 of them. 52 of them, they were all believers. Or let me be careful with this. They had something that is documented that says that they believed in God. I'll go that far to say. 52 out of 55. I would take that ratio today in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. And they came from different denominations. So you know there's varying beliefs, but they had one core belief that they were all pretty much on the same page with. So God's law is the authority. And these folks want the authority destroyed. So what are the two common threads amongst the people or the monuments that these people represent? What do they want to destroy? They've destroyed them, but I mean, what's the common thread of the people, I should say, that of these monuments? Jefferson, Washington, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. There's two things, there's two common threads that I've noticed. One, these people were all proclaiming to know God. The second one is that these people were all flawed. And they understood God's grace. And they knew they needed God's grace. I don't hear anybody saying, oh, these were perfect people. You know how you go to a funeral and you hear about how perfect somebody was and they were great? I think you want to honor somebody. You want to think of the positives, yes. Is it the time and place to bring up the negatives? No. What's good? What is a good in that? But that can become a trap for some people if they're not really thinking it through, thinking, oh, well, you claim this person was perfect. They weren't necessarily. These guys knew they needed God's grace. Satan's plan is to do what then? With these riots. What do you think what is Satan's plan with this? Chaos. What's the word?
Chaos.
Chaos, right. Chaos, and then that creates something else too. Because that was one of the two words. Chaos creates fear. If we're in fear, we can be controlled to a degree. We're more vulnerable to be controlled. We need not to be fearful because we need to be controlled by God. We're going to be controlled by something. Would you agree with that? Something's going to control us. We might as well choose what controls us and choose wisely. Is God surprised by these riots? They're not new. This has been happening for thousands of years. He's not surprised by this. Who has 1 Peter 5:8? Please read that. I wanted that read again, and that was the point there, the core of all of this, what it's begun with. But you know what? That was God's warning to us, right? Who has Jeremiah 29:11? Thank you. He has a plan for us. Okay, he gave us a warning, right? Now this is the plan. What else is in the plan? Romans 8:28, who has that?
And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose.
That's his plan. Psalms 33:11. It's part of the plan. Now, he gives orders. God gives orders. Proverbs 3, 5 through 6.
Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding, and all thy ways and all thy tenderness.
That's our directive. We've been given our marching orders. That's what we need to do. Let's not fear anything or anybody except disappointing God. That's what we should fear. How do we do that? We get into our scriptures more. When we fail, we fall. We get up. We make it right with God and those who we offended. And we get up and we do it again. We do the right thing. We go after it again to do the right thing. I hope for the young people in here, I'm not putting a burden on you. I hope ultimately you see the big picture. The burden already exists. Whether we talk about it or not, it exists. So we might as well recognize it and say, we identify this for what it is, we label it, and then we simply look at it and say, now what are we going to do about it? I used to sit in church and I would try to stay awake because a lot of the sermons when I was growing up went right over my head. Okay, well, I needed to work at listening. Not the greatest skill for me, but I needed to work at listening. And I didn't have a desire and a hunger to know the truth because I was a kid and all I was thinking about, what am I going to do when I get home from church? And that's what I was thinking about. And that's how I would stay awake. Well, that's a kid. But what point do you stop being a kid? So this time I'm going to ask the same question. What point do you stop being a kid? I want somebody that's a teenager or in their 20s to answer that question. What is your take on it? When do you stop being a kid? What age is it? Somebody in their teens or in their 20s. Any guess? 19? I wish that were true. What is it? 13? Could be. But you know what it is? There's not a wrong answer. So you're right. You're right. But it's a choice. When are we going to stop being kids and start being adults in the way, and I forget adults, forget age. When are we going to be mature enough to say, I want what God has. I don't understand it all, but I want to try to get whatever pieces I can along the way, and I'm going to just keep taking it in. And you know what? That right there is a sign of maturity, spiritual maturity. A spiritual maturity that your parents, we want to see. We love to see because we're looking for you to grow. If you stay a child all your life, I am 51 years old, folks. I see 51-year-old children because they don't take responsibility. They didn't ever feed on the truth and take it in and feed on more of it. They didn't do it. Why do you have to wait till 51? Why do you have to wait till 25 for me to start growing up? Maybe it was 30. I don't know. Why do you have to wait until 19? 19's a good guess. Let me tell you what, if we had spiritual maturity at 19, our country wouldn't be where it is. If we had spiritual maturity at 13, it's hard to grasp. It's hard to grasp what our land would be like, but our world would be like. Guys, nobody is holding you back from maturing and pursuing God. Nobody's holding you back except one person. And we can't even blame this on Satan. Who is that one person? There you go. I see hands up. They're right. Absolutely. Don't be discouraged. Don't be overwhelmed. The wickedness in this world is not new. The solution for all the wickedness in the world is not new. It is so well documented. We've got the solution, folks. We just need to use it. It's the Word of God. It's pursuing that. And you know what? You'll never stop growing. I've said this one last time. This is the last thing I'm going to share with you. I've said this before. My grandfather, he was 96, I believe, 20 years ago, somewhere around there, when he passed. He started out as just a kid living in South Georgia, North Florida, right above Jacksonville area. And he was raised in a house that the way they had the floor, it was a dirt floor. The way they did their floors back then, they put oil down on the floor so it'd keep the dust down and pack down. That's how they would have floors back then. So they were poor. They were farmers. And what he was homeschooled because how do you get to school back then? Okay, he was homeschooled. So what, and they didn't call it homeschooling. That was just what you did. And because he started his morning taking care of the animals and stuff like that before sunrise. And at the hottest part of the day, they would go inside and they would sit down and read the one book that they had that they owned because they were so poor. They only had one book. What was the book?
Bible.
Absolutely. Bible. So he learned to read out of the Bible. Now, here he is a teenager. He is called to preach. He was called to preach, and he had never been to Bible college. He read other books by that point that he could borrow and go to the library and you know, if he could do that. He didn't have shoes until he was a teenager. And he worked at the mercantile, which is basically your kind of your pharmacy, your general store, all of that mixed together. And I got this very cool picture of him in a white suit with it, and it was very cool. But he wanted to preach the Word of God. So what he did, he was hungry to do it, because there were preachers going, oh, well, you know, and he just ignored them. And then he was asked to preach a funeral for, get this, preach a funeral for a veteran from our Civil War. Okay, there were a lot of those still alive when he was a young man. So he was asked to do it because nobody else would do it. He dug the grave by hand with a shovel, dug the grave, buried the guy, performed the service. And there were only a couple other people that showed up. but he got to share the gospel. He had to dig a grave. He had to handle this dead body. And he did it just so he can preach the gospel to a couple people. God used him to plant churches, and there's a great history on there. And he planted a number of churches and raised people up. And that was back when they had once a month church in these rural areas. And people would come into town on that weekend. And he preached. So much to share there. But here's my main point, and I'll finish with this. I was able to go see him because he lived an hour and a half from here. And I would travel by his place every so often. And I would try to make extra time. And I would go sit down with him. He had all sorts of health problems. He didn't complain about them. He had a lot of health problems. He lived till he was 96, but he would say, when I would come see him, he'd say, Benny. Very few people call me Benny. Benny, sit down. Let me tell you what I learned today. The wisest man I've ever been around in my life. He would tell me what he learned out of the scriptures that day. It's the same guy who had been reading the scriptures for over 90 years, preaching. There's always mysteries in there. There's always something we can pursue. There's always a value. So when we think that we've learned it all, because I have met a preacher at one time, you recall, he said, I don't want to hear anybody else's preaching because I've heard everything. We didn't stay in that church. He was a young preacher, and hopefully God's working in his life. Folks, we got the solution for everything that we need. We got it. We got to use it. We got to use it. I say that to you, but I really say it. The finger's pointing at you. How many are pointing back at me? More.